We're back with another Blunt Business on CannabisRio.com. My next guest is based in the fast-growing New York State cannabis market, which we know now as greenlit for adult-use cannabis. We're going to talk all about that here on the program. Now, my guest counsels clients on various business matters, including structure, expansion, formation, sale, and dissolution of business entities and partnerships, regulatory compliance, internal and external best practices, compliance audits, and general advice concerning complex and novel issues of law. I'm here with the lead of the cannabis practice team at Farrell Fritz, based in Albany, but the firm's in Uniondale, Long Island, New York, here with Jason Little. Thanks for being on with me, Jason.
Brasco, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. So let's talk about all this. First of all, we now know that in New York State, we're seeing the issuing of conditional adult use retail dispensary licenses, or CAURDs. I don't even know how you pronounce that as an acronym, if they tried to card, I guess. And they've been granted the first retail dispensaries to open for legal adult cannabis use in the state. Actually, just before I got on our grassroots bargaining series, I talked to the folks at Forest Farms, Carly Miller Hanbrick, that actually her product line is now in one of the very first dispensaries that have opened up. And on the recent decision to allow licensees to select their own site, which has been a point of contention possibly, you said this. Now, quote, they didn't necessarily rush issuing the first card licenses and still did not have leased space or funding committed, although per DASNY, or the Dormitory Authority for the State of New York, they're ready to go. They just do not have leased space to start. It shows the practicality of the Office of Cannabis Management's mission. And the best bet is to reopen card licensing to let folks who qualify to apply, and also the ability to outfit their own space on their own dime, have the opportunity to do so. So fill us in on what's going on here.
A couple of things are going on here. I think, first off, the intent of this public-private partnership, which does work, and it is going to work, and it's working for Smacked LLC, the dispensary that just opened in Manhattan, in a different way than it was initially intended to work, right? But if we go back to the purpose of MRTA, we start to see why the state would want a fund to help both the folks that would need the help on the front end to get spacing in the first instance, and then ultimately to kind of regulate how the folks were going to be getting licenses in the first place and who was going to be getting them, right? So what is happening on the physical space side is that it isn't funded as it was intended to be funded yet. It will be, my understanding is. And the lease spaces and the turnkeys are not ready to go. So instead of waiting for a long period of time for those to be ready, and at some point they likely will, and you see the, and I'm sure we'll discuss the, you know, the quote unquote, the pop-up solution.
Correct.
With Smacked LLC, they weren't ready to go. So when I had my interview with Bloomberg, you know, and I have a client in particular that has retail space that could outfit it. Is a justice involved individual. And we were thinking, you know, hey, if we opened this up, if we provided, because there's a second element, right? So there's the justice involved element for folks to get the card licenses. And there's also a business element that they have to meet, right, in order to be eligible for those licenses. So on the front end, the turnkeys aren't ready. It shouldn't hold up legal dispensaries from opening by people who qualify right now for a card license, but aren't getting card licenses and or haven't been issued them yet. And I think maybe at that point that it was time to shift. Fast forward a little bit, right? So now they are going to allow what they're calling pop-ups, and they're going to provide some funding for these pop-ups to work and open for short periods of time until the lease spaces are ready and or that they can create enough capital to open their own.
So let me, before you expand on that, Jason, let me go ahead and just give some context to the listeners here. So you just mentioned you were teeny, but just perfectly. Governor Kathy Hochul actually mentioned on her website that the announcement of the opening of the first cannabis dispensary owned by a justice impacted individual. And as of today, it opens up that pop up, as you said, Smacked LLC, owned and operated by Roland Connor. And it's a soft opening with this pop up. And that's through February 20th. And with other some initial dispensaries you just mentioned, supported by the New York Cannabis Social Equity Investment Fund, the lease licensees will have the opportunity to open on a short-term basis to fast-track sales, start generating capital, and after which they will close for final construction and then reopen. So this is only affecting the social equity licensees, or are there other licensees that are going through the same process?
On the retail side, it's only affecting the social equity licensees, because they're the only folks under the CARD program that have received the licenses, right? So,
right.
But you teed up where I wanted to go with this, and that is that it does affect other licensees, in that it affects the cultivator licensees, the processor licensees, and the distributor licensees, right? So I have cultivator clients, for instance, who were concerned that they were going to have no place legally to put their product, right? That has a shelf life that can only be stored in its native form for so long. And it was creating on their end, right, a problem with market price vis-a-vis the processors who can process it and store it probably for a little bit longer period of time. I have a processor client who says, yeah, that's great, but you know, we put money, time, and investment into it, and there's nowhere for this to go. So by allowing these pop-ups, yeah, it has a direct effect on the market in general and other licensees who can now offload their product and get it processed and get it marketed. I believe you said at the start of the show, you had spoken with the good folks in Ithaca who now have their products in one of the New York City dispensaries.
Yeah, the Healing Works Dispensary, on Broadway at 8th Street, which is about like 10 minutes away from this other dispensary here. My only thing is, I'm wondering, and they're a nonprofit, by the way, that dispensary as well. So, but my thing is, because this is that social equity licensing, I'm sorry, I'm going to have a little bit of suspicion on this. Why is it they just couldn't get themselves be able to be open by this point? Why is there a delay? Why does this dispensary have to do a pop-up? And why do they have to go and wait, start up, shut down to reopen again? I feel like it's a little extra red tape and some other interference that's going on here. Can you clear me up on that?
Well, I don't believe there's any interference or red tape. I think that if we go back, New York is doing it a little bit differently than states like Massachusetts and California have done it, or Colorado. And they're severely restricting for what they would say is fantastic cause, right? People and the folks and the entities who can get licenses at every stage. All of that is built into MRTA. That's the social equity component. It's a very big component for New York, and it separates itself quite drastically from other states, even though there's some social equity components there as well. As a result of that, the number of licenses being given and the number of folks who can invest and the ability to get online quickly is kind of, it's set back a little bit, right? So if you were in Colorado, just by way of example, and not necessarily to be factually accurate, I'm just using a state that has legalized marijuana, and you allow private equity to come in and you allow private investment to come in with ownership equity, you allow larger businesses as opposed to smaller businesses to get in on the ground floor, right? The startup time for those folks is drastically smaller than it is for the folks who are getting licenses in New York. So that's the issue. And again, that is the point and purpose of MRTA. So it's not unintentional. It's a slow process to get this market rolling, and I believe that it probably was always going to be a slow burn and a long process to get this market rolling.
I can agree with that. It's just for me, what I'm hearing about, if you're thinking about a retail dispensary, they get their license. If it's an MSO, they're going to have their stuff already kind of set up. They're going to make sure their zoning, any kind of permits that they need, any kind of things like that, they're going to try to get that all set up so that all they have to do is go ahead and open up shop. But that was where I'm coming from when I see this here. If it's not just the social equity licensees that are dealing with this, if that's going to be something that's an ongoing problem because of the slow rollout, then that takes me into what I want to talk about after the break. Because while the legal dispensaries are trying to get themselves off the ground and they're slowly but surely getting licensed, getting granted the licenses, and getting them chance to finally go ahead and start setting up shop and start selling, there's a still illicit market that's burgeoning right now, and there's been a lot of talk about that in the media just over the last week or so. I want to bring that up to you coming up after the break about the amount of illegal cannabis stores that have been opened up in New York, and there's a lot of talk about it. We'll talk about that after a short break. I'm here with the lead of the cannabis practice team at Feral Fritz, Jason Little. And if you want to look at their website, see what they do, website is feralfritz.com, FareLFritz.com. We're back after this.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Welcome back to Blunt Business. I'm here with Jason Little, the lead of the cannabis practice team at Feral Fritz. So this story made a lot of headlines. New York City Police Department announced that there are more than 1,300 illegal cannabis stores selling without a license. And the claim also says there are roadblocks to seizing cannabis without being sold illegally. State Senator Liz Krueger is working on a bill with her partner in the Assembly, Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes, and Governor Kathy Hochul that would crack down on illicit sales in shops, includes revoking business licenses from shops also selling tobacco, fining landlords for renting to illegal businesses, and making it easier for the NYPD to seize cannabis products. Now, on top of that, just yesterday, as we're recording this program, City Councilwoman Gail Brewer, who chairs the Council's Oversight and Investigations Committee, said during the hearing on the Council's Committee on Consumer and Worker Protection, she said, quote, "We know there is an illegal cannabis store, van, or street vendor on what seems like every block in New York." Then she also went on, "The proliferation of cannabis retailers over the last 22 months has been gone almost unchecked by the city and state." And then the Daily News she spoke to, and she also said, "These illegal stores, it seems to me, suck up revenue that should be going to licensed dispensaries." And I mean, that's a lot being said right there, that this issue, while the good intentions of the Office of Cannabis Management and the state itself, this is a big problem.
Yeah, it is. And I would say, actually, it's a problem that we're going to see in the future.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a problem now, and that, you know, let's use the NYPD's numbers, that there's 1,300 within the city that are operating illegally. There are only two total that are operating legally. So, you know, that's kind of the problem today.
Now, Jason, I want to ask real quick, can you tell me what they were saying about what the roadblocks are about being able to seize cannabis being sold illegally? What is that?
Yeah, I'm not sure what that is. I don't know that the NYPD would have historically had issues seizing illegal or illicit drug products. There, you know, MRTA makes the possession of certain amounts of marijuana legal. So to the extent that individuals have a permissible amount on them, I mean, it's not illegal to carry it, right? To the extent that products being stored in large quantities, I think that probably makes it a little bit different. So I'm not 100% sure where they were going with that. I mean, one of the theoretical places I think they're going with that, though, is, and I think, and this is just my opinion, but MRTA, in addition to being, you know, this wonderful statute that opens up a legal recreational marijuana industry within the state of New York, you know, it has a purpose and intent behind it. And one of the largest purposes and intents was to decriminalize marijuana possession, consumption, et cetera, in the state of New York. And that's kind of contradictory to requesting increased enforcement of marijuana.
Right.
Albeit from an illegal, you know, being sold from an illegal or unlicensed shop, or in an illegal way in an unlicensed shop. There's the contradiction there, right? And I think that folks struggle with the legality of it and the amount of work that it would take, probably, from, let's use the NYPD, to figure out who is and isn't doing it, who has it legally as opposed to illegally or in via quantity, et cetera. You know, that's the only thing I can, you know, in my opinion, that's
right.
I think kind of the, there's a pull, right? And there's a small little contradiction with what was set up from an intent purpose and what we're being asked to do now. And, you know, the slow rollout of this is kind of really exacerbating that tension.
If we had
100 stores online, maybe the problem's less. We don't know because we don't.
Right. And I'll make things clear. And we haven't been told anything as to what might be the entanglements, but it's not as if that the New York City and New York State has not been trying to crack down. We know that back in August, there were 19 cannabis trucks that were seized. We know that in December, there were more than 600 pounds that was confiscated by the sheriff's office. And they did a two-week crackdown on unlicensed pot peddlers across the five boroughs. And, you know, they talk about how there was a critical counterweight against the wave of unlicensed cannabis that has been out there since the legalization, and that the city has issued 500 civil summonses. This is according to the Daily News back in December, and 66 criminal summonses to dealers as part of their enforcement program. So it's not as if they're going, but the thing is, I feel like that's something where lawmakers need to go ahead and do something. But I guess the other thing I want to ask is that lawmakers did decriminalize. And that, I don't know if that was something that was different in terms of the rollout in other markets where the criminalization might not have been played. Is there any kind of a cloudiness, I guess you could say, any murkiness when it comes to people that are able to go ahead and now have possession, and the fact that people might also try to go and still have intent to sell, that's something that might be one of those roadblocks intended. Is that something that in the rollout of legalization, because they did decriminalize, is that something that's making it a little bit tougher?
In some part, sure. In some part, sure. I think the statute contemplates for the issue by limiting, and I can't think of it off the top of my head, sorry, the amount, but it's not a sellable amount, or not a sellable amount in large quantities, right? So you can't have what I would call a easily sellable amount of marijuana on your person under the current statute. So it decriminalized personal possession. Does that make sense?
And
you know, so does that make it more difficult for law enforcement because each individual person is allowed to possess? Sure, to some extent. I don't know that would inhibit law enforcement from going to physical shops that are selling it. But these shops, while they are selling it, while people think they know they are selling it, they're not necessarily advertising it. They're not putting it on their billboards outside. It's more like the market worked before decriminalization, right? It's just a little bit more in your face now.
But the thing is also the focus of what you're doing in your firm. You're working with legal dispensaries. You're working with legal cultivators. It's just that this illicit problem, I'm sure just looking from the outside, looking in, I mean, it's the magnitude of it that New York State could do more. I mean, listen, we know that the California has this big problem as well, with also their own share of having thousands of complaints, and then having, you know, law enforcement in California also have to crack down on all these different grows, all these different dispensaries. It's going to be everywhere. And I'm sure New York State was not going to be an exception to the rule, but it's just, it is amazing how many are out there, how many companies are out there able to go ahead and try to pull this off, try to make a quick buck. But the thing is, it's one thing to say, okay, you have all these different illicit stores and all these different illicit businesses, but New York State has to crack down on them much more. And if there are roadblocks, then let's get some legislation in. Let's get some laws put into place so that you can go ahead and cut some of this out. That's what New York State needs to do. That's just my opinion, speaking only myself. Go ahead, please.
There's another element of this, right? So A, you're very right in that the number is kind of staggering. 1,300 within the city, that's a lot. And
for a good headline.
Yeah, it's good if we believe the headline, right? And it's going to absolutely negatively impact, mm-hmm. you know, the legalized market when that's, even if that's up and running and at full steam, right? But another advantage to the illegal market that, again, it kind of ties in a little bit with the lawsuit that, you know, I think we can discuss a little bit later. But you know, the folks that are selling marijuana illegally don't have to buy it from licensed cultivators, processors, and distributors.
Right.
In New York, they can get it cross-border. Unregulated, untested, completely, you know, have potential for harmful effects, but a completely different product. But you know, those types of market restraints are not, it's not just that they can, you know, sell it in a shop in New York City. They're not theoretically buying legal marijuana from a licensed processor or distributor within the state of New York. They're probably selling illegal marijuana that's coming from New York or any one of the other states that you can get it.
I want to bring up this point because I want to tie in what I talked about before the break. So if these illegal, these illicit marketers, you know, you could call them legacy market. People will say legacy operators. Maybe some of them are. And they're getting a chance now because everything's opened up. They're going to try to get away with what they can. And when they get cracked down, they get cracked down. But the thing, too, is that it goes back to the social equity licensing and the fact that if there are those that can't get themselves into the Cannabis Social Equity Investment Fund in New York and get the licenses and not have to go through the red tape of, well, we need you to do a pop-up shop so you can start selling. They need to close down for construction, and then you get to open back up. Like, I can understand where if some of these operators that might want to be in there and do the right thing and get a license, they're not going to want to go through this kind of jumping through fiery hoops just to get their business up off the ground. That's the other thing I think that New York's also got to consider.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I believe, and don't quote me on the number, but 950 or 960-ish card applicants originally. So not non-for-profits and or justice-involved individuals with the requisite business background. So not anywhere near that number of licenses have been issued.
Right.
So, you know, obviously OCM's going through that process. We saw this on the cultivation licensing side, right, where they issued just made-up numbers, right, 30, and then on a rolling basis, another 15, and then another 15, and then another 20, and then another 30 to get us to where we are today, right?
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, right, and I believe OCM has said that's the process they're going to use for the card applicants as well. So it's not just a card application limitation problem. It's, you know, there were nearly 1,000 card applicants. I can't speak to whether all of the folks who applied were either qualified or able to get businesses running sooner than later. I was speaking particularly with respect to one of my clients and mm-hmm. you know, when I made the statement, and it was true with respect to them, but you know, there's the ability, you know, within the framework we have now to have a large number of licenses issued minus, you know, the certain regions that can't have licenses issued at this point. But obviously, you know, the sooner we can get this moving up on online as a larger scale market, the better New York will be, the better the legal licensees will be, and the better, you know, the health and safety of New Yorkers will be.
It's the OCM just has, there's things they need to focus on. This is one of the things I want to point out to New York State, make that point. And look, I'll make this point as well. The 1,300 number for the amount of illegal shops that are out there, let's make mention of that. A lot of the stories I kept seeing, you know, Fox 5 New York, Fox Business, like, let's just know that there was a little bit of a political slant for those that are maybe anti-cannabis that wanted to go ahead and put that story out there to go ahead and, you know, basically put some hit pieces out. I get it. But the other thing, too, is that the Office of Cannabis Management, they have other focuses on those things, too. I want to bring this up as well. PBS NewsHour recently reported on this, that New York State forbids marketing and advertising that is, quote, designated in any way to appeal to children or other minors, end quote. But the OCM has yet to officially adopt rules on labeling, packaging, and advertising that could ban cartoons of neon colors, prohibit depictions of food, candy, soda, drinks, cookies, or cereal on packaging, all of which the agency suggests could attract people under 21. And the Deputy Director of Health, Public Health at KPAs, Lala Hunt, says that, quote, consumers need to be aware, parents need to be aware, if they see products that look like other products that are commonly marketed to kids, that's an illicit market product. So one of the products she points out is one called Stony Patch Kids that sounds like Sour Patch Kids. And there's other products being sold by the dozens in these other illegal dispensaries operating out in the open, and officials worry they're selling unsafe products. This is where the crackdown is even more. I mean, this is where that needs to be taken care of. Now, without asking anymore about what these other dispensaries are, let's just talk about when it comes to the legal cannabis businesses. You know, is that something that's been a concern in terms of how they have to change what their packaging might be or what the branding might be?
Yeah. So that's actually a really good question. So I did see the piece that you're referring to from PBS, and the Office of Cannabis Management actually has for the legal adult use marijuana industry has adopted regulations as of June 1st. They then went to a 60-day public comment period. I believe they've been published in the register. Don't quote me on that, but okay. They've obviously been promulgated, and they've been out there for a good period of time now, and they do exactly what you are concerned about, right? So the packaging may not, you know, among other things, contain more than one brand logo and brand name, right? There's size restrictions on branding. They can't emit scent or sound or, quote, to be made attractive to individuals under 21. They can't use, for instance, can't use cartoons, neon colors, or similarities to products typically marketed to underage individuals. So Office of Cannabis Management has issued some rather comprehensive regulations with respect to the marketing of adult use. Now, with respect to, you know, the folks selling illegal, with respect to the folks who are running dispensaries that are not licensed and selling products that may not be permitted within the state of New York, I mean, that's a completely different issue that goes back to the enforcement. The enforcement by local law enforcement on the front end, right, and state law enforcement in conjunction therewith to make sure that those regulations are being complied with, and that illegal substances are not being marketed to and getting in the hands of underage children.
So we're going to go off to commercial break, and I want to bring up one more thing that's still being brought up. OCM, man, you're getting lambasted on all different sides, but I'm pointing this all out to you here on this program. And this is where you go, look at what all these other media sources are going to say. They're going to kind of, you know, they're not going into the weeds like we are here. But these are things that I found out when I knew that I was going to have Jason on. And practicing attorney from Long Island, New York, understands the New York state market, leading the cannabis practice team at Feral Fritz. My thing was, I hope the people at the OCM, and I hope New York State, and all the people that are, you know, looking advocates in New York State, I hope you're paying attention to this program. And you realize, look, I'm pointing all this out, taking all these stories, bringing them to context, and realizing, just putting it all together. We want rolling out of New York. We want New York State to be the prime role model, the example of which every other state that green lights now for adult use is in play. We want that because this is the role model that's going to lead to the full federal legalization whenever Congress wants to do that, 3, 5, 10 years, whatever it's going to be, because I don't think it's happening anytime soon. But New York must set the example. So all this stuff with 1,300, you know, illegal shops out here, the packaging issues and the adoption of rules needs to be made. All this stuff needs to be played in there. There's a major tax revenue. So Governor Hochul, you know, step up. Make sure everything is in order. You want to talk about your reelection. Make sure this rollout is complete. Everything is done correct. You've got brought back in the office. You're here now. Your team, your Office of Cannabis Management, whatever has to be done, this has to be here so that, you know, the clients that Jason represents, they have pure transparency, know what to do, and there are no roadblocks or any kind of obstacles for them to go ahead and open up and have a business going to flourish with very little issue. So that's where I'm coming from with that. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about a lawsuit because there is now an issue where their license is being held up. We're going to talk about that after a short break here with Jason Little, leader of the cannabis practice team at Feral Fritz. Again, the website to check out his firm is Farrell, F-A-R-R-E-L-L, Fritz, F-R-I-T-Z.com. We'll be right back.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
I'm back with final questions with Jason Little, with Farrell Fritz, the leader of the cannabis practice team there at Farrell Fritz in Uniondale, Long Island, New York, but based in Albany. Leafly recently reported on an active federal lawsuit that continues to block the issuance of 63 dispensary licenses in Brooklyn and four other regions of the state. Office of Cannabis Management, you know, every time I say this, you might as well take a drink or take a hit. They've expressed confidence that the temporary injunction currently stopping the state from awarding conditional adult use dispensary licenses will be resolved in the coming months. The plaintiff told Leafly that, quote, enjoining the licensing process for other operators was not their intention. Until the suit was resolved, cannabis buyers and prospective dispensary owners in the areas of Brooklyn, Finger Lakes, Central New York, Western New York, and Mid-Hudson Valley must wait for dispensaries to open. So what can you tell me about these legal issues that are going right now, the pushback in these various communities to the rollout of adult use?
Yeah, so, well, you know, there's obviously the issue with respect to rollout is I believe there's 63 something odd licensees in one of the four regions that are affected by this lawsuit that can't get operational as a result of an injunction. And the injunction was sought by Veracyte New York One LLC. So they at least intended to seek the injunction. And the general legal issues from 2,000 feet above are really federal issues, right? They're in some saying that the licensing process and the way that you're applicable for licensing in New York, and not just socially justice involved individuals or card licenses, you know, I think that's the point, but I think it goes a little bit broader than that, is discriminatory in that it is shut off to the outside world other than to New Yorkers. So where that becomes an issue with Coward is the justice involved individuals are required to have a prior conviction for a family member with a prior conviction for a marijuana related offense in New York. So the question then becomes, what happens if you have folks from Pennsylvania or Ohio or Florida or Colorado that have similar convictions in states other than New York and or for residents of states other than New York? And how does that affect their ability to get licensed in New York? And the answer is that they're not applicable there, right? They're not able to apply, at least now. So what they have attempted to do is essentially use the Commerce Clause, the dormant Commerce Clause of the United States Constitution, and say that you can't restrict interstate commerce in such a way by trying to localize and establish for New York's benefit only a market that doesn't benefit all of the 50 states. That's the general issue. And that's not a New York only issue. That's an issue in any of the states that have tried to put walls and borders around any industry, including the marijuana industry. So that's the legal issue. I believe the Office of Cannabis Management through the New York State Attorney General's office has appealed the injunction, and you know the ruling on that appeal has not been issued yet. So as we sit and talk today, those I can believe four regions are enjoined from having licensees open up shop, and that's obviously an inhibitor on the market because that's a number of licensees and a large portion of New York State that is not on board.
So at this point now, talk to me about some of the things you're doing right now with Farrell Fritz when it comes to the cannabis practice. And if you can give me some background, what you've done so far on board with the team and how Farrell Fritz has been doing a lot of things outside of cannabis for a long time. But what can you tell me about the legacy of the firm and entering into the cannabis space and how it's been so far?
Well, the first thing I would say is that, you know, obviously the marijuana business and the cannabis business, it's a business. And Viral Fritz has a large corporate practice. It has a large regulatory practice. It has an Albany lobbying practice. It has a land use practice, right? So Viral Fritz has, for many, many years before I joined Viral Fritz, been providing the services that cannabis clients needs, whether that be transactional corporate that we've done for every industry, or, you know, zoning and land use, or on my end, you know, what am I currently doing? You know, a lot of it is, you know, formation setup, planning, regulatory analysis, and licensing, right? So those are the issues that are on the plate now. Litigation. We have a large commercial litigation group, and I have a background in commercial litigation as well. So, you know, that's an area that, as we see and we just talked about, is going to probably pick up as disputes occur. Meandering through the regulatory process is one of the ways we help at Viral Fritz. Land use and conversion is the way we help at Viral Fritz, obviously, and you know, anything in between. And we have a corporate practice, and one of the issues that will rear its head, and it has already, is how transferable are the licenses? And the answer is they're not. And what are the appropriate and legal ways around transferring equity in one of these licenses for one of these businesses? And that's something that we will focus on as those issues arise too.
So there's a lot to go and meet when it comes to Viral Fritz, full service law firm, 15 practice groups advising startups on entity formation, founder shareholder agreements, funding, executive compensation benefits. There's a whole lot of other stuff. And also there's a blog that your firm also has, the New York Venture Hub, or it's nyventurehub.com if you want to go and check that out as well. There's a lot that you're working on, and this, the cannabis division, and the fact that you're getting to work this division and, you know, be a part in the cannabis industry and the expertise that you bring would be really great to put together. So I'm glad you were able to get the chance to go and join us and really answer all my questions when it comes to New York State. We're always interested in what's going on. We've been keeping in touch with what's happening here. I know I had another attorney that was based in New Jersey that came on. And again, we're just following along. We want to see things go well in New York State. And I'm glad that you're there in the front lines while all this is going on for the legal, you know, people want to do right by this. But it's also where that government, the Office of Control of Cannabis Management, the governor's office, law enforcement and all, let's work it all together. Public-private partnerships, whatever it is to help out with social equity, whatever it comes out to work on compliance, all these different issues that I want cannabis to roll out well in New York State. Let's just nip all the other issues in the bud, cross our, you know, dot our I's, cross our T's, get it all set, because New York must be the role model for rollout of full legalization. If they can see California how it's done, and now New York does the same, they're going to say, okay, we can open up shop for everybody out. And then everything opens right up, which is what everybody wants. So I hope that happens, and I hope New York will continue to make improvements and things like that. And it's going to make your job easier, obviously, for you and your clients. We hope for that. Jason Little, again, lead of the cannabis practice at Viral Fritz. Thanks for being on Blunt Business. Thank you for making the time.
Brasco, it was a pleasure anytime. Happy to come back. It was enjoyable. Much appreciated.
All right. So again, the website, feralfritz.com. To check them out, FARRELLFRITZ.com. Thanks, listeners, for just listening into Blunt Business as you always do. You know where to subscribe. You know how to reach out to me. If you want to, email me. If you have anything you want to talk about with the program, any guests you want to recommend, if you want to be a guest on the program, or if there's any topics that I'm not covering, or anything that I might have said in any of my rants during this episode or others, feel free to call me out. I want your voice to be heard, too. So feel free. Brasco, BRASCO, at CannabisRio.com. I welcome you. Hey, nobody's taking the plunge yet, but you can be the first, and I hope you do. Thanks, listeners. We'll talk to you next time. The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.
Save big money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save big.